Good evening, James McKenna here with my Science Hour. It is for December 9th, 2021, and tonight's main science topic, I will be concentrating on Comet Leonard. This is turning out to be more fantastic than I thought before. I did some very detailed analysis, literally minute-by-minute analysis of this comet, and I'll be going through some of the highlights of that tonight, giving you a day-by-day breakdown on what you should look for. This is in the western sky. If you've gone out at all lately and had a clear sky, you look up in the west. If you're especially in the northern hemisphere, you look up in the west. And even in the southern hemisphere, you look into the west and up above about, a couple hands at arm length off the horizon is Venus, the brightest object in the sky, except for the moon, which has been passing by Venus in the last couple nights. But here's the deal. Comet Leonard is on its path to come within just spitting distance, literally, of Venus. Comet Leonard is on a path where it will come within 10 lunar distances to the planet Venus. And in electrical terms, I mean, that's just like nose to nose. And so Comet Leonard, I am starting to call it a spark plug. And I think it's comical to watch the standard science press backpedaling as hard as they can, trying to already make excuses. But I'm capturing all of this. I'm capturing all of the web pages that are publicizing about this, space.com and all the rest of the NASA rah-rah rags out there. And, of course, they're not saying anything about Venus. Now, and of course, that's what I'm talking about, because when this comet connects electrically, Venus will become part of the nucleus of the comet electrically. And they're going to be close. I mean, they're going to be, like I say, spitting distance close. And so I'll go through all of this. But first, a couple quick announcements. Also, I want to talk about Comet Holmes and some other comets. But at any rate, this past week, there have been reports coming out of Western Canada, Vancouver, up into Alberta, Saskatchewan, that there's extremely high levels of radiation in the atmosphere. And they're trying to figure out what this is. Of course, I've been called to give an opinion on this, and I don't have a final solution. The one thing I came up with is possibly this could be Fukushima kicking up. Because where is another source of this unbelievable amount of radiation? Well, I don't know. But at any rate, that's something I'll be investigating. Of course, my advanced physics degree is in nuclear and solid-state physics. And so it's something I happen to know a little bit about. It's a story I've been following for years. I, in fact, stopped commenting on the Fukushima event because it became a moot point. The Japanese government was not going to do anything. The international community was not going to do anything. But what is the source of this radiation up in Canada, Western Canada? You know, if it's up there, it must also be in the United States. There are military underground bases there. Could it be related to a leak in one of the underground bases? Literally, we don't know, but there's been some very good exposure on videos. This past week, another story here, Amazon servers went down. And so this caused, I believe it would have been Tuesday, that the Amazon servers went down. And I had some calls that I was making with some people, and they were depending on internet things. We were doing screen shares, things like that, and could not do it because of the repercussions. Amazon servers are used in many different respects around the planet for business, for social media, and other types of, there's a lot of content apart from selling books and Barbie dolls on Amazon. There's a lot of activity on their servers. So I never got the final story on that. You probably want to look for that. And also, just a quick notice, this came off a caller called in on John Moore's show yesterday. I typically don't repeat things, but when I'm a guest on John's show, but this was a very important one. A caller called in and identified that in the Midwest, they're putting in 1,200 miles worth of some kind of device to take CO2 out of the atmosphere. And there again, it's something that I have a vested interest in these technologies for carbon removal. But also, it gets to be crazy. And that system that they're putting in could easily be put in Arizona, New Mexico, the scab lands of Oregon, where there's nothing going on. And instead of ruining perfectly good farmland, which is at a high premium. But then again, you might want to look at the real reason they're doing that. Okay, so on to Comet Leonard. Now, I have 3 pages of notes here, so I have extensive notes, and I know I'm not going to get all through all of this material tonight, but I want to get through the visual part where you can go out in the evening, take the family out in the western sky, look up, watch Venus, and as we progress, this is going to be starting this Sunday evening. And so you'll potentially get the first view of this comet on the 12th, this Sunday evening, but I doubt it. It'll probably be Monday night, and then Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday, and I'm going to continue up to, I think Thursday is the 16th. That's a week from tonight, and I'll be definitely talking about that on my show. But the real light show is going to happen after that. That's when we're going to potentially see Venus go comet. And the more I look at this, the more I think, yeah, this is a very good, a very high potential, where the comet is coming so close to Venus, and it's going to be a fairly bright comet. It's already a naked eye comet right now, 2 weeks before the close approach to Venus. So it's going to be a fairly healthy comet by the time it reaches Venus, and it's coming within 10 lunar distances. If we had a major asteroid coming close to Earth at 10 lunar distances, it would be big news. If we had a comet that was a full-blown comet coming 10 lunar distances close to Earth, that would be a big, big, big story. A big, big story, because we would be inside the coma of the comet, literally. So anyway, let me start on this, and let me just preface this by saying if you go out, some people might want to get binoculars or a little telescope or something like that. I think the best equipment to look is with binoculars and a tripod. And so if you're choosing binoculars for astronomy, you want binoculars with a great big lens on your side of the binoculars. And the reason being is because they're more comfortable to look through. But I don't think you're going to need a set of binoculars or a small telescope. But the point here is there are some dangers involved, and I want to be very specific about these, because the sun will be going down. Mainly we'll be looking at Venus after the sun goes down. But never look at the sun directly with your eyes. Never look at the sun through any type of optical equipment, unless only trained astronomers have special equipment. Never, as an amateur, as a person on the street, unless you really know what you're doing and are there with a professional, do not look at the sun. It'll burn your eyes out, and especially parents, be there with your kids. But what I'm saying here is this viewing that we're going to be doing here is after the sun goes down. Now, let's do a little time conversion here. And time conversion, 1 a.m. Universal Time, UTC. One in the morning is the equivalent to 8 p.m. on the day before. And so typically we'll be out there looking up at the sky between 6 and 8 p.m. And if you're up in the northern hemisphere now, it's winter, you're getting closer to those shorter days, December 21st being the shortest day of the year. You're going to have, late in the afternoon, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you're going to have the ability to go out and see Venus. So that's 4 hours earlier. So what I'm giving here are timestamps for 8 p.m. Central Daylight Time. And so if you can see Venus before that, you'll get a little preview of this. Or if you stay up a little later, You'll be able to see Venus for 2-3 hours after the 8 p.m. time frame, and that's why I picked 8 p.m. This is 1 o'clock in the morning, universal time, the next day. Okay, so to kind of simplify this, the view of the comet and Venus that I'll be giving here will be for 8 p.m. But if you're out in the afternoon, you'll get a pretty much the same view. Okay, so I'm going to quickly go through this. Now, this is 1 week before Christmas, the closest approach of this comet to Venus. That'll be December 18th, 2021. But I'm going to start on the 12th, this coming Sunday. If you go outside, look up, and I suggest you do that, even though the comet will not be very visible at all. The comet would be on the horizon, and I don't think you're really going to see the comet, but get used to looking at the planet Venus. The planet Venus is up in the western sky, and if you look above it, you'll find the moon coming back over your head, kind of behind you. And then also you'll see Jupiter as a lesser bright object up in the sky, more up higher in the sky. And Saturn, if you know what to look for, is also out there, but these are kind of in a visual alignment, but they are not, I repeat, they are not electrically aligned. The things here that are going to connect electrically are the comet and the planet Venus in a couple days. Okay, so go out on the 12th, Sunday night, go out and look at Venus up in the sky and just look at it. It's a round, very bright white ball, and the comet will not be visible yet. Okay, on the 13th, Monday night, go out, look up in the sky, there'll be Venus, and this is the first night where the comet will start to be visible just off the horizon. And so if you go out and you're in the northern hemisphere, no matter, just right before the sun goes down, you'll be able to see the comet. And so in the northern hemisphere, say the sun goes down at 4 o'clock in the afternoon where you are, might be Kansas or something like that, up farther north by the Canadian border, the sun goes down like, say, 3:30 in the afternoon earlier. Right after sundown, look in the western sky and you should be able to see the comet just off the horizon, okay? And you'll see the tail sticking up away from the sun, and you'll see Venus up in the sky. And now here's what's going to happen over the next number of days. That comet is going to progressively get closer and closer and closer to Venus till the day before. It'll actually be right below Venus. This is our visual alignment, but it's not yet at Venus. So it's still a little, so the comet is on our side of Venus, and it very well could be connecting electrically at that point. Okay, so that's Monday night. You'll should be able to see the comet and the comet tail sticking up off the horizon. And by this time, the comet should be well-developed and eye-visible. The tail should be visible, etc. And by the way, it's kind of a greenish color, implying that there's a lot of CO2 in this comet. Okay, the 14th, which is Tuesday night, you go out, you look up in the sky. Venus is slightly closer to the horizon than it was the night before, but to the casual observer, you probably won't notice that. And the comet now is just above the horizon, and in terms of astronomical location, it is just above the ecliptic, in other words, just above the plane of Earth's orbit around the sun. Venus is just a little bit under the ecliptic at this point in its orbit. And so the comet then is still above the ecliptic. And at this point, the comet crosses the orbit of Venus. Just into if you were looking from Venus and Venus was moving in its orbit, the comet is right out in front of Venus in its orbit. So, and to some of you, this may not make a lot of sense, but what I'm going to describe now is what it's going to look like from your vantage point on Earth. From your vantage point on Earth, the comet will be below and just a little bit to the right of Venus. And you'll see the comet tail sticking up and you'll see Venus. And on the 14th, it's getting close enough to where we could start to see an electrical connection. At that point, it's about one-tenth of an astronomical unit, or about 9 million miles from Venus. And so that's it's still kind of at the edge of where it might be at the point where it's just going to start to arc. So the night of the 14th, there could be the first visible connection of electrical discharge between Venus and the comet. And also watch to the sunward side. That would be the downside, looking down towards the sun for spikes, for the sunward spikes to develop. And at this point onwards, Venus could go comet. In other words, Venus itself could turn into a comet at any point from the 14th, the 15th, the 16th, the 17th, the 18th, etc. Okay, on to the 15th, which is Wednesday night. The comet crosses the ecliptic. Venus is just below the ecliptic, and the comet is approaching Venus and in a line with the sun. In other words, from your vantage point on Earth, the comet is going to be right below Venus. So you're looking up in the sky. There's Venus, the big bright thing you've been looking at, and this comet is coming right up underneath it, the nucleus. And the tail is probably going to swing out a little bit behind the comet, kind of like in an arc. At this point, Venus could actually turn into a comet, so you would see two comet tails. But the problem here is that the comet is just in front of Venus, and so it's going to be hard to differentiate if Venus is actually going comet. It's after the 18th where the comet separates and goes away from Venus, where you will start to possibly see Venus, the comet, and the comet Leonard, the comet, as two separate entities. Okay, so now that's the 15th, and let me see if I'm looking at my other notes here. But there may be a connection, an electrical connection that you're actually seeing. Okay, so let's go to the 16th, which is Thursday, a week from tonight, next Thursday night. And by the way, these are all at 8 p.m. These are all at 8 p.m. And if you, for example, are not taking notes, go back and listen to the archives. Because, and the other thing is, you could go back and take notes later on, or you could actually just go out and look and enjoy the, like a television show, just enjoy the scenery, so to speak. But if you're looking in for technical data, by the way, I will be going through this again in a lot more detail. I'm just running through the calendar right now, just so you get an idea of what's going to be happening here. Okay, so the 16th, I would say this is when the cosmic spark plug is really going to be there. The comet is moving in really, really fast. And the comet right now is right below Venus. I mean, just right below it. And when you're looking up in the sky, it's like they're just right next to each other. But the comet nucleus will be below the planet Venus. And that's why you have to watch these every night. Just watch them approaching. To see what the comet itself is looking like and see what Venus is looking like, and then all of a sudden to see if you can differentiate seeing a electrical connection between the two, and then Venus going comet and potentially sunward spikes, where they either one or the other could develop sunward spikes. Now, the official closest approach of the comet, according to JPL, NASA, who of course is never wrong, no, but about technical things, I'm not knocking them. The JPL people are very technically on target when it comes to things like this, the closest approach to Venus. And they're giving it at 2:08 a.m. UTC. So this is 9 o'clock p.m. Central Time, and that'll be on the 17th. So the 2 a.m. UTC time on the 18th, translated, gives you 9 p.m. Central Time on the 17th. So that would be Friday evening, the next Friday evening. And that's when the closest approach is going to be. And at that point, the comet will be actually, from our point of view, our vantage here, our visible vantage point from Earth, It'll be right behind Venus, so Venus will be in the forefront now. The comet nucleus behind, and at this point, you might start to see Venus go comet. And, I mean, 10 lunar distances is really, really close. Really close electrically. And I estimate, too, that when Venus came by Earth back in the Moses event, the Venus event, it was probably a similar distance from Earth. Very, very close. Now, before I get into the very final part of this discussion going through the next days, this is where it really gets interesting. I just have this feeling. It's one of those intuitive feelings that there's about every NASA scientist in the country and around the world, because they're all over the place, is listening to this show. In secret, in the back of their office or in the back of their lab or wherever they are, maybe in their car, where nobody will notice them listening, but they're all listening to this show. And I think that's comical, at least a very high percentage of them. And not just NASA scientists, but that whole genre of professional scientists. But at any rate, okay, I will go on. So that was the 17th. That's the point blank range, spitting distance close. And I have some other notes on another page here, but I'll just insert one. At this point, this comet will be directly connecting electrically to Venus, which will cause basically a hurricane in the upper atmosphere of Venus and potentially extend down to the ground. And that hurricane will probably last for a bit of time. And so it's a different scenario than Earth, because Earth's atmosphere is electrically different because we have a magnetic field, we have electric currents, we have an ionosphere. And Venus is somewhat of a different situation, but for temporary conditions, and also I believe there's some satellites around Venus that could be getting some real bird's eye data on this, and of course NASA's not going to talk to you about that. Okay, so here we go on to 1218, and by the way, I'm going to repeat all of this. Over the next few weeks, I'm going to go into a lot more detail, a lot more science, and then leading up to the inferior conjunction of Venus, which is on in January, early January. Okay, because I remember I talked about some of this last week. I gave you an introduction, and this is there's a lot of science involved in this whole encounter of Comet Leonard, with Venus. Okay, so now we're on December 18th. This is going to be Saturday night. And once again, 8 p.m. Central Time. If you're Eastern or Mountain or Pacific or whatever, or Alaska time or whatever, just translate that for your own good. And also, if you're North, you're going to see this activity earlier in the afternoon, or like maybe 3:30, 4 o'clock, whenever the sun goes down and you get a good view of Venus, you can start watching the light show then. Okay, now the comet on the 18th of December is moving very, very fast. And I'm not going to give a number because for a lot of people it doesn't mean anything. And then there's the relative speed, because this thing is coming down and at Venus, and Venus is coming in the other direction. So these babies are going to be zipping by each other very fast. And that's why, more than anything, it's like a spark plug. You know, when a spark plug goes off, it's bam, like that. And that's what this is. It's a spark, literally a spark plug in outer space. The comet being the spark plug, it's already discharging the solar capacitor. It's built up a very high negative potential around it, the electron cloud. And that Dubai shielding, which is a much bigger plus hydrogen cloud around the comet, is going to be connecting to Venus probably by the 16th. And that's when the light show, I think, is going to start. But anyway, be that as it may, now what happens as the closest approach is on the 17th, and so here's your vantage point. And what's happening is the comet is actually going down below the ecliptic, and moving away. So from your vantage point, here's what you're going to see. You're going to see Venus moving a little bit closer to the sun, but in that same high position in the sky. And then you're going to see the comet moving off to the left and up, kind of up and to the left of Venus. Okay, now this is what I've been getting leading up to, because prior to this, the comet was coming in. It's getting closer to Venus. It's getting nose to nose with Venus. But all this time, you could, if Venus were going comet, you could mistake the Venus comet tail for just some kind of an extension of Comet Leonard's tail. It would be hard to differentiate. And of course, if you had a different vantage point, like NASA would have with the space telescope, or like they have with satellites, etc., around the solar system, they would be able to get a very different vantage point and see this from a different angle. And also, by the way, at this point, if they start developing sunward spikes, the old pat, bogus answer that they always give when there's a sunward spike is, oh, that's an optical illusion. This started with Comet Aaron Rolden in 1957. I think it was 57 when Comet Aaron Rolden came through the solar system, developed a tremendously bright sunward spike. And of course, they couldn't have that because that would imply electric fields. And they just got done dealing with Velikovsky in 1950, 51, 52, stating that comets are dirty snowballs. Back then, it was an ice ball comet model, the Fred Whipple ice ball comet model, turned into the snowball comet model. But they denied it, and they said, oh, that's an optical illusion. And so anyway, since then, there have been literally dozens and dozens of examples of comets where we see them broadside. In other words, the optical illusion of a type 2 narrow tail pointing away from the sun, but it looks like it's pointing towards the sun, doesn't hold water. It doesn't hold ice. It doesn't hold anything. And so anyway, my point is, if you see sunward spikes in this configuration of Venus, we are looking broadside at Venus. And so there's no way that this could be some kind of a tail that was a mistaken, because the tail will be away from the sun, which is down below the horizon. But we're looking almost broadside at this configuration of the comet in Venus. So if you see sunward spikes, they will be true sunward spikes. There's no way this optical illusion argument could be used. So it's important to state that here. And so anyway, at this point, though, on the 18th, where the comet is moving up and away from Venus, it's already had the spark plug. Venus has connected with it electrically. Venus has become literally electrically part of the comet nucleus. And that's when you should see the individual comet tail of Venus. And that is, by the way, okay, so you might be going, well, what's the big deal? Well, remember a little incident back in the 1950s, and then a guy named Emanuel Velikovsky came along and said that Venus was a comet, and the ancients talked about Venus being a comet. And that's a little problem here, because if it weren't for that, weren't for my work, Venus could, or NASA could sweep this under the rug and just pretend like they knew it all the time. But they got a little problem, because now if Venus, and the whole world is going to see this, by the way, this is visible to the entire populated world of planet Earth. Everybody in the world is going to be able to see this and see that Venus is turning into a comet. It was a planet, now it's a comet. How does that work? Just like the comet coming in, what is it, K2, and there's another comet, I forget the name offhand, that's coming in. They're way out in the solar system, and they were thought to be Kuiper Belt planets previously, and all of a sudden they turn into a comet, and it's like, oh, da-do. You know the old soft shoe when the guy had a bad act in vaudeville, and he'd like take his hat and dance off the side stage left? That's what NASA's doing here. They're trying to cover their tracks, and it's not working because there have been so many incidents in, for example, just arriving at a comet nucleus, believing it's going to be icy snow there, and it's black tar baked on the surface of a hot, dry rock. There's no water. There's no ice. There's nothing coming off the nucleus. There's nothing near the nucleus. There's no cloud of gas near the nucleus, etc. But they keep saying it's an ice ball. But anyway, the 18th is the Saturday night after my next week's show. So next week, not this coming Saturday, but the next Saturday, the 18th, that's when if it's going to happen, Venus is going to appear as a comet with a comet tail of its own. And this should be interesting. And with this comet coming this close, I can just say that I don't know how Venus could help but go comet. And it might be short-lived. It might only last a couple hours. It might last weeks. It could potentially last weeks. We don't know. We've never seen anything like this before. Okay, so now I'm going to jump up to the 19th and the 20th and the 21st and the 22nd. These of December, and so leading right up to Christmas. So what we have now is, as you look up in evening sky, Venus is going to be dropping just a little bit every night until finally on the 9th of January, Venus will be at sundown. Venus will be right between us and the sun. And so that's the time. And so anyway, the question there is, if Venus has an extended comet tail that lasts, that persists that long, it's a couple weeks, so that's a long shot, then could we be passing through a different portion of a different, very different comet tail of Venus and getting a very different influx of viruses, flu viruses, basically? And of course, I've talked about that before. That is published in the medical peer-reviewed journals, how the inferior conjunction of Venus can create, two things. One is the viruses this goes all the way back to the 1200s when the Chinese first saw this, observed this phenomena, that an increase in an influenza, first affecting the swine, then it was mutated to birds, chickens primarily, and then mutated to humans. And this is following the inferior conjunction of Venus. And they also, now modern science has noticed, an increase in solar activity during the inferior conjunction of Venus. But in terms of what you will be seeing up in the night sky, the comet will be moving up and to the left of Venus from the 19th to the 20th, 21st, 22nd, 23rd. And you should see that comet very distinctly. And the question is, how big will that comet get? Because this could cause Comet Leonard to become a much bigger comet. And that is why all of the science apologist rags that are out there, space.com or whatever, are trying to tout this backscattering baloney. And backscattering only works when you're really in line with the sun. And Earth has, by the way, moved along, and the comet is nowhere near in alignment with the sun. So the backscattering argument, for all you NASA scientists out there who are reading this too in the garbage science magazines that protect your lousy behinds, it doesn't apply. It doesn't apply. The backscattering argument does not apply. And this comet is going up and away, etc. So if it's increasing in brightness, it's because it's an actual increase in brightness. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some sunward spike activity here. And like I said, we're looking broadside on this comet, very close to broadside, which means from the side. And therefore, any sunward spike activity would be true sunward spike activity. And the other thing here now, as this comet leaves the region of Venus, a couple things could happen. It could pull a significant amount of material off of Venus, which would be visible. It would be a visible physical like tail connecting Venus to the comet. And it could be the other way around, because Venus definitely is a bigger object gravitationally. So Venus could be pulling material off of the comet nucleus if it becomes charged to the level that the comet is, and there's no reason to believe it's not going to be. Okay, so anyway, that's the short version, and I'll be talking more about this on next week's show also. I'm going to be going into some more details. But just as a review, I want to go through this now, and like I say, if you missed this or you have not taken notes, And you can go out just for the light show. But what you will be looking for is Venus going comet, the comet developing much bigger tail, potentially sunward spikes, electrical connection with Venus. And as it gets closer, an actual physical exchange of atmosphere between the comet and Venus, which would be visible also. And this could be so many aspects of my theoretical work could come to fruition in this one event that it's not funny. And of course, with something like this, the vast majority of the people in the world can see it. There's no way that NASA can cover this up. anyway, okay. So let's take a look at this again. Just quickly, starting out on the 12th of December, that's this Sunday night, I'd like you to go out and look at Venus. There won't be any comet to see, but I want you to start looking at Venus. Okay, there's Venus, big bright spot. Look up farther, directly up from this, where the sun went down. So this is after sunset. As soon as the sun goes down, wherever you are, go out, look up. You'll see Venus up in the sky, very bright, the brightest object in the sky. And the moon receding backwards, kind of back over your head. And then if you look up higher in the sky, you will see Jupiter. Not as bright, but certainly a bright object directly above Venus. That's Sunday night. Monday night, go out, take a look. There's Venus up there, same place, dropping down a little bit in the sky. And then you may see the comet coming up off the horizon. And that the tail should be sticking up kind of off the horizon. And it may surprise you at that point. It might start at that point to be very bright, a very significant comet. There was a comet last year called Neowise that became very bright, very visible, etc. So that's Monday night. Tuesday night, and by the way, all of the orbital dynamics, etc., I have cataloged. But, okay, so Tuesday night, the 14th, now the comet is going to be up off the horizon. When you go out at sundown, the sun is down below the horizon. Venus becomes visible up in the twilight sky. Look down below, closer to the horizon, and a little bit to the right, and you should see the comet there. And the nucleus is going to be at the bottom, and the tail will be sticking kind of up and probably up to the right a little bit. Excuse me. And okay, so that'll be Tuesday night. Then Wednesday night, what you will see at sundown, go out, and you're going to see the comet moving over a little bit right under Venus and up closer. And at this point, that could be the first time it could start connect electrically on the 14th. On the 15th, it could, at any of these points, it could start to connect, and you could potentially see a secondary tail, in other words, the tail of Venus, two comet tails, and potentially an electrical connection between them. And the reason you could potentially see an electrical discharge is because now there's going to be material, physical atmospheric material, flowing between the comet and Venus. And so if there's an electrical discharge, it will light that up like a light, just like a neon light bulb. But it might be a carbon dioxide light bulb. It could be a NH series molecule light bulb, just like a fluorescent light bulb. You've got gas, you've got an electrical discharge, and very visible between the comet and Venus. And of course, a dirty snowball shouldn't be doing that, I dare say. Okay, so now on the 16th, the comet is just like right below the nucleus, the bright part of the comet, that it's the lower part of the comet from your vantage point on planet Earth here. You're going to see the comet nucleus right below Venus, and then the comet tail extending upwards. And Venus will be behind that comet tail. And so certainly at this point, they're going to be very close. And now on the 17th, which is going to be Friday, the next Friday night, a week from this coming Friday, that is the closest approach. And the comet, actually, at this point, it will be behind Venus. And you will be able to see Venus. You won't be able to see much of the comet nucleus. But you may start to see Venus go comet. You might see two electrical discharges. And you if you had a different vantage point, like NASA has with satellites, you could probably see that electrical discharge. It's going to be happening. I mean, this comet is coming in very high negative potential from the buildup of electrons around the nucleus. It's a cloud of electrons around the nucleus. And then on the 18th, this is where the fun starts, because the comet actually moves up and away from Venus after igniting it like a light bulb, literally, and like a spark plug in an engine, and leaving Venus as a comet. So you, at this point, you would see the two distinct comet tails, one for the comet Leonard, one for Venus. And if you had better astronomical equipment, especially infrared equipment, you would be able to definitely see the tail of Venus. With the naked eye and through the atmosphere, it might be difficult to see visually because there's a lot of haze in the atmosphere, etc. But I would just hope that this thing explodes into brightness to the point where you can see, yeah, these babies are connecting electrically, and something here is going, there's some fireworks going on up there in the sky. And this is what the ancients talk about. If you look in the Colbran, they talk about the multiple big comets up in the sky, and are, you know, in doing battles, so to speak, electrically, sending electrical discharges. That's what the ancients, that Velikovsky, examining the history of the all of the races of the world, all of the cultures of the world back in the, you know, what Velikovsky said was around 1500 BC. But in the Colbran, I think, is written about earlier stages and also the Venus event, but talking about multiple big comets up in the sky doing battle, you know, making electrical connections. And you can see this activity going on from planet Earth. How long will Venus stay comet? How long will Venus remain as a visible comet? We don't know. We don't know. I cannot answer that question. I would say, now this event is going to happen very quickly, and Venus is in a circular orbit. So it's not cutting the gradient of the electric field of the sun, whereas the comet is. The comet has already done that. It's already established a long electrical connection. And I would say that the comet electrical connection will be probably conservatively 50 million miles. That'll be enough to extend back to Earth's orbit, but it's not electrically connecting with Earth, nor Jupiter, nor Saturn. There's nothing else in the solar system that'll be connecting electrically with this comet Venus configuration. Earth is already beyond them. Venus is coming around, catching up to the point where on January 9th, 3 weeks later, quite a long time later, Venus will be catching up, and that's when the inferior conjunction of Venus is with Earth. So the question is, could it possibly last that long, the Venus tail? And if it did, it could connect electrically with Earth. Okay, and then there's one last point here, and there's a lot of other science I want to cover. But when this comet Leonard, comet 2001A1 Leonard is the designation, when it comes, it's going to drop down through the solar system and then come back up. It's going to cross the ecliptic on October, let me look at my notes so I make sure I got this right, 6th. Yes, October 6th, 2022. And so here's what's happening. And very interestingly enough, when it comes up and crosses the ecliptic, it'll be perfectly aligned with the planet Mercury. Mercury, little fleet-footed Mercury, will be coming around. And talk about, this is a very necessary point of data, because I'll be talking later about potential perturbations in the orbit of this comet. And that milestone, October 6th, 2022, this comet coming up through the ecliptic, and it'll still be very visible at that point, coming up through the ecliptic and aligning with Mercury is a milestone. If it does not do that, then we know that the orbit has changed. And I've captured the ephemeris, the actual orbital data for this comet, and it's coming close enough to Venus where its orbit is going to change. It came in on, I think it was a 35,000-year orbit, which means this comet was in the solar system 35,000 years ago. Or maybe 70,000, I forget which was. I'm sorry, I don't have that number at the tip of my fingers here. But it, certainly a long time in the past, this was a comet that was captured in an orbit, a permanent fixture of our solar system, so to speak. And because of its interchange gravitationally with Venus, it is expected to go out on a hyperbolic orbit and never come back. That is the prediction you see in all of the scientific write-ups about this and the trade rags. Call them trade rags because it's kind of a buzzword in the industry for magazines, technical magazines, so to speak. But at any rate, nobody talks about that. And if here's the issue. During an orbit, If the orbit is, in this case, a parabolic orbit or an elliptical orbit, it's coming in, and if you nudge it at its very closest point to the sun or anywhere in that region, then the change in the ultimate orbit, the perturbation, in other words, the change in the orbit, will be very significant, and much more significant than if you gave that same push when the object was way far out in its orbit. And so at any rate, it could drastically change the orbit of this comet, which would be very interesting because it's coming close enough to become a moon of Venus. And wouldn't that be interesting if, I'll just throw this out for speculation, and I don't really think this is true, but in another life, in another situation, this could be true, where a comet was sent in specifically to become a moon, a terraforming type of project by aliens, and which we might do someday if we visit other solar systems. We go, hey, there's a planet that needs a moon there. Let's go out and find it a nice moon here. We'll send it in, and with the technique of tail drag, capture it around this planet, and then this planet has a moon. Therefore, it's going to have a magnetic field and it can start developing life and have a protective magnetic field like Earth does. Very important. And so it's very important to understand some of these. In fact, this is what I'll be talking about probably over the next couple of weeks. Besides reiterating these, and much of this will already have happened before my next show next week. We'll be heading into the point, by next week, the 16th, I'm sorry, we will have that night, maybe I'll do it live outside, talking about what I'm seeing with the comet Venus and the connection to this, the planet Venus, the comet Venus, whatever you want to call it, connecting to this comet Leonard. And it's going to happen. They're going to connect electrically. There is no question about it. You have a high discharge comet coming in, connecting within 10 lunar distances, literally a spitting distance, as I call it, in outer space. And so, and then causing weather. This is something. Venus does not have weather like we have weather on Earth. It's got some swirling cloud patterns up in the upper atmosphere, but that's about it. And the reason it doesn't is it because it has no local electric batteries. The reason Earth has local electric batteries is because we have a moon, we have a magnetic field, we have a a five-layer magnetic field, and we have the all of the because we have a magnetic field. When the solar wind comes in, it splits, something it does not do at Venus. The solar wind comes into Venus, it hits it on the nose side and creates upper atmospheric X-rays. On Earth, the solar wind comes in, hits the magnetic field, the electrons go one way, the protons go the other way, and creates a battery. That's a differential. The electrons on one side, the protons on the other side. That's a battery, plus, minus, and that creates weather systems on Earth. Whereas Venus does not have that because it doesn't have a moon which drives electrically the magnetic field and the electrical currents that then garner the, for example, our Van Allen belts are a result of us having a geological and a plasma magnetic field. And the Van Allen belts are one layer of that five-layer magnetic field. Just as an example, in what is the Van Allen belt? They are relativistic protons going one way, electrons going the other way. They are particles caught in the magnetic field of Earth. And it's a way these particles that leak through our protective magnetic field, it's a way they get trapped and basically skirted out of the of coming in and hitting Earth. It's another protective layer that gets those particles orbiting Earth, but they don't come into Earth. And those are like big donut-shaped rings of charged particles around Earth, part of our five-layer magnetic field. Okay, so, but Venus, excuse me, once again, does not have that. Venus does not have a moon, and therefore does not have a magnetic field. Okay, so jumping on to a few other related topics, other double comets. Okay, well, how about Hale-Bopp? When Hale-Bopp very first was discovered, and that is discovered by normal human beings, not the intelligent agencies, the CIA already knew very well about Hale-Bopp and that it had a companion on the way into the solar system. That's what Harrington discovered. And when it was first filmed by NASA, there was a big object in orbit around the main nucleus of Hale-Bopp, and the main nucleus of Hale-Bopp was planet-sized. So this, and the reason you could measure that was just by simple astronomical technique. You measure the distance between the nucleus of Hale-Bopp and this orbiting object, and measure the period of the orbit, and you can calculate the mass of the nucleus. And of course, Harrington had already done that because he had seen this pair coming into the solar system in 1991. He'd actually seen it in the late 1980s, and finally solidified the orbital data, etc., and went about reporting it to NASA, who was funding this. And that's when the CIA came in, shut down NASA, made everybody sign non-disclosure agreements. Lots of people in NASA quit. A lot of secretaries quit. There was a big upheaval. At the time, I never knew why it was, but now I do know. I describe all of this in my book, Planet X Update 2020, The Real History of Planet X. But at any rate, back to the relation of this to this comet Leonard and Venus, comet Hale-Bopp had a dual nucleus. It had an object orbiting it, and you could see it in the video whipping around, and that continued to orbit the nucleus until it finally worked its way in because of tail drag. It worked its way in towards the nucleus and became part of the nucleus. So when Hale-Bopp eventually becomes a planet, which it will, part of our solar system, it'll be back in around 2,200 years. I don't know if any of us will be here in 2,200 years. We'll see. Or is it 2,600, whatever it is, a couple thousand years, it'll be back. But it'll be a lopsided planet. It'll have a big nucleus with a big lump on one side where this object became part of the main nucleus. Could Comet Leonard suck off some of the atmosphere of Venus? This is another theoretical question at this point, and the answer is yes. And now in the Earth-Venus event, when Venus came by Earth, Earth experienced a tremendous pollution event. And so the end result there was that Earth's surface gravity was much higher than Venus. Venus was a smaller object, not much smaller, but enough where the surface gravity of Venus was less. And so once they connected electrically, Earth was not a major comet before that. It was discharging the solar capacitor, but because it was in a circular orbit, it was much less than the discharge going on with the comet Venus. But Venus lost atmosphere, and we know that because the ancients saw it. The ancients saw the flooding. They saw the rain of fire and brimstone, the naphtha coming in. And so Earth was winning the battle over the atmosphere coming off of comet Venus. And we were enshrouded in that. That's where the glaciers came from. The glaciation occurred during that period of time because we had a period of time when we lost sun And so energy from the sun. And so when the water came in, it froze into ice sheets. And it's just finally getting to the point where those ice sheets are vacating today. When I was a little kid, there was a place called Glacier National Park. There's no glaciers there anymore. In the, you know, my lifetime, a lot of these big glaciers, the big European glaciers that were left, are gone. The big North American, and also a lot of the big tundra glaciers from Russia are gone in my lifetime. So we're coming up out of this ice age, and that was due to Venus, the comet. We went into the atmosphere, the coma of Venus, and so it robbed us of sunlight. There was a big influx of water, had this major glaciation. And then after Venus passed by, the sun was reflected off the glaciers for a very long period of time. And so it took a long time for Earth to warm up. And I talk about this in my weather book, Principia Meteorologia, The Physics of Sun-Earth Weather. So a lot of other topics to cover. I'll be talking about Jupiter's Great Red Spot and how that started by a comet discharge. We don't know how old it is. One thing, NASA is quiet as a church mouse on the size of this nucleus. Usually they say, oh, this is a nucleus of about 606 miles across or something. They give some kind of an estimate. On this comet, Leonard, they are quiet as a church mouse. Quiet as a church mouse. So that, just the quiet, just the silence is deafening, as they say. But anyway, there's a whole host of other topics I'll be talking about next week, plus giving you an eyewitness update. And I want you to go out starting this coming Sunday night, look up in the west, look at Venus, check it out, and keep watching it over the next week. Go out every night, plan on this, take the family. You know, if it's cold, take your jacket or parka or whatever, and plan on watching this event, because this could be the biggest, best Christmas present that maybe I've ever gotten in my life, to see Venus go comet. This would be just fantastic. Anyway, I got about a minute to go here. Let me remind you that the MR5 water filters on my webpage are on sale. They're already at a 10%, approximate 10% discount, and you get another 10% off if you use the coupon code JMCC. And in fact, any products on my webpage, you get a 10% discount at checkout, and everything is on sale. They're very good prices, the best water filter products anywhere on planet Earth, or in this side of the galaxy, in fact, as far as I can tell. But go there, jmccwaterfilters.com, or jmccsci.com is the J. McCanney science page, and of course there you see everything else that I'm doing, all of the research, etc. And I'm out of time. We'll talk to you next week. Be sure to go out and see Venus and start watching this progression with this comet coming by. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.